Paige Albiniak, Editorial Director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. Today, I have the privilege of being joined by John Weiss. He is co-founder and partner at Human Design, and Dan Clark, who is partner at Human Design, which is based in my hometown of Boulder, Colorado, one of the very few agencies I get to speak to that's actually in my same place. Hi, guys. Welcome.
Hey, Paige.
Hey, Paige. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Yeah, we almost should have done this in person because you probably have better recording equipment than I have. But in any case, we're all waiting for this big snowstorm to come.
Yeah.
All right. So, John, as co-founder, tell me how you came to found Human Design, why that's its name, and then also how you guys decided to locate it in Boulder, which, as you probably know as well as I do, isn't necessarily... Well, it has some marketing in it, but it's not like LA, right? In terms of being a marketing hotspot.
So my career, I've started my career as a designer around brand and user experience. And I'd worked at some agencies working on large brands that most people have heard of. And through that experience, I really enjoyed creating experiences that would put a smile on someone's face or provide some value in their life. And as I got further in my career and I got to a spot where I felt like I had enough experience and backing to start my own agency again, this is my second agency, I wanted to really start an agency with the ideal that we could do well by doing good. So how do we actually use the skills that we have to tell the right stories and create the right experiences to move people in really meaningful ways? I met my co-founder, Matt Knoll. We started Human Design under that premise. And then the name just came natural. The reason why I called it Human Design was the idea that we are designing in service of people and in service of human beings. So everything that we do should have that at the core. That's worked out really well for us. And being in Boulder was great because you're centrally located between the coasts. It's easy access. You're able to attract top talent. And Boulder is a hot spot for my background around technology, you know, what Techstars and Brad Feld had done for technology, and then what Alex Boguski and Crispin Porter Boguski done in terms of bringing creatives. Boulder was a great hotspot for the genesis of Human, and it just felt pretty natural. And then you can't beat the lifestyle that it affords.
Yes. And it is true. Boulder's kind of becoming a Silicon Valley East. There's a big Google outpost here, and there's lots of startups. So, Dan, how did you wander along into the scene?
Oh, that's a good question. Originally, as a client, so my background is more on the entrepreneurial side and in scaling venture-backed companies. And I had taken a bit of a hiatus after the last startup that I was working in to film a documentary on the overpopulation of feral cats in Hawaii. And Human has done a lot of work supporting sort of environmental sustainability work, particularly within entertainment and film with Netflix and with Vulcan Productions, Paul Allen's former nonprofit, one of the executives at the founding team of Microsoft. And so knowing what Human had done for Netflix's The Ivory Game with Leo DiCaprio, as well as Luisa Hoyos, who's always been an idol of mine in Racing Extinction. I had reached out to John and Matt on LinkedIn just to kind of see if they could support the documentary. And through that, we sort of became friends over a couple of years as I was filming that project, ultimately came on to help support the branding and digital aspect of promoting that, because I always cared deeply about it, not only being a film, but a campaign on the back end of it to really make sure that what we were talking about had impact. But then just through becoming friends, really got a sense of my background, which is generally helping to scale businesses. And I loved everything that Human stood for. And it very much felt right from what I was looking to do, which is be on the business side of generally creative and marketing, which is where my background lies. So it was just kind of a natural fit.
So Dan, just for clarification, so you on one hand are working with Human to help them scale and grow, but on the other hand, you also are working with them on documentaries, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
One of the beauties of having an agency and working with creatives that you really respect is that as much as we do work within brand and communications primarily, that we also have a film team that's mainly produced from a documentary background, similar to my own, in which case we've supported. We just had a documentary that's premiered at Vail Film Festival and Portland Film Festival about a local guy who's created a robot that paints using AI, and it's a really beautiful film. We have another, it's technically under wraps now, but a documentary that's in development that I think we'll get some really exciting distribution behind, and we're excited to move next steps on that. So yeah, I mean, most of my time is spent on the marketing brand communication side of the house, but we do really have a strong ambitions of building out human entertainment for non-scripted documentary format in the success of the first two films that we've worked on. So I do oversee that as well.
Okay. And then, not to wander too far afield here, but you guys want to do that specifically in the film theatrical space, or would you do, you know, like documentary TV series as well?
All over the board, even branded content. I think because of the democratization of channels and how people are thinking about brand building over advertising right now, there's just such an opportunity to build brand and build community around telling very thoughtful stories. And whether that be branded content, whether that be web series, whether that be more theatrical, I think we've already dipped our toes into everything. And Tim Twynham, who heads up our production, have to give a huge shout out to him too, because he does oversee all of this as well and has been absolutely instrumental in directing Brushstroke, the film I talked about earlier, and a lot of our branded work as well. So I don't think we're particularly precious about the form. It's really just the stories that we're telling and making sure that they're impactful.
Yeah, that was a question I had, which is that are the lines very clear between the divisions, or are you kind of like, we're about storytelling, so however we apply that, and then you can kind of draw from whatever skills you've got in-house?
I would say the lines aren't super clear, with the exception of we do take different approaches depending on what the end result needs to be. From a client perspective, if we're really trying to build awareness or emotional affinity or build community or actually support conversions, we're going to create a different thing or create a different digital experience to support that thing than we would if we were really trying to get distribution on a film. So there are definitely different approaches. And also, we have a really robust network in terms of if we do need crew to support. We have a very substantial in-house film and photography production team, which is unique to our world. Usually that's something that agencies kind of handle the creative strategy, the campaign development, and then farm out the production. We found a lot of synergy in keeping that all together in-house. So we do a lot of that with our internal resources, but a lot of the work we're doing does require additional support. And so we do bring in folks with specific backgrounds depending on the form that it's going to take.
Yeah, of course. Okay. So let's go back to this idea of doing well by doing good. And then I know that you guys look for, you know, incorporating brand purpose when you are working with brands. But I was wondering if you could talk about, John, a client or two, and assuming you have permission, about the kind of work you've done for them. I know that you guys, some among your clients, and these are not entertainment clients, but Smart Wool is one, Woody Creek is one. I believe these are both Colorado brands. But what you guys have done with them in terms of incorporating brand purpose as you've worked with them to build out their brands. And if those are not examples you want to use, just pick another example.
Well, and to that point about incorporating brand purpose, that is the ideal. And that is our goal for anything that we work on. A quick point of clarification in terms of Human Design's genesis, you know, as an agency that is now 8 years old, we've been able to really evolve and find our own footing around what does that exactly mean. Mm-hmm. So our own start was based on that idea that you could do well by doing good. And something we found was that the messaging was almost too tight initially, where we were having people not come to us because they felt like unless they were actually moving the needle in very overt mm-hmm. ways, like, mm-hmm. you know, the United Nations or racing extinction, like Dan mentioned, then they weren't coming to us. So we kind of broadened our own messaging, which is, you know, unless you're bad people doing bad things, unless you're bad people doing bad things, there's probably something inherently good that you're doing that we believe is moving the human race. You know, if you're a company of 15 or 20 people and you sell a widget, as long as that widget isn't harming the planet or people overtly, if it's providing jobs and healthcare and benefits for your employees, and it's helping people grow in their own careers, and it's building a small sense of community in that environment of a company, and then the people that that company impacts, then in your own way, you're helping move the human race. So when we have clients approach us, we tell them our job is to not identify or give you purpose or make you human. It's to identify those things that are within your organization that are inherently human about your brand, or that give you purpose on the daily. So a couple of the clients, Smartwool as an example, having been born and raised in Colorado, up in the mountains in Gunnison, Colorado.
Smartwool coldest place in the country, just so everybody knows.
Yes, coldest. They had that moniker for, I think, 15 years, coldest spot in the nation. And I can attest, when you go to school as a first grader, you have to wait out on the playground until the bell rings and it's negative 30. It's pretty cold. But Smartwool, when they approached human design, I geeked out personally because it's such a tremendous brand. It's local, founded in Steamboat, just such a solid brand with such a great product to inherently make your time outdoors more comfortable. Whether you're wearing Smartwool base layer, socks, whatever you're wearing, their whole intent is, how do you enjoy the outdoors in a way that helps you truly enjoy it? So you're focused on the outdoors versus focused on your own comforts or being cold. So Smartwool is doing their job. You kind of don't even think about them. It would be the way I would put it. Right. And so when they approached us, it was this idea of how can Smartwool communicate with our consumers those sort of value benefits. And so that was a fun project for us to say. At the end of the day, the campaign we came up with was called Do What Feels Natural. It's just a great play on enjoy the outdoors in a natural way, to where what you're wearing, you don't even have to think about it. And Smartwool helps facilitate that relationship with the outdoors. So that was a fun project that doesn't have that inherent, like, move the human race tenet, which is our own mission at Human Design. And then the second one, and I'll end with this one, that did have that move the human race concept was IFAW, which stands for International Fund for Animal Welfare. You know, that's a nonprofit that's raising awareness around endangered species and the Endangered Species Act. And when they had approached us, it was a tall order with just three easy tenets. How do we tell a story that protects the Endangered Species Act, gets people to care deeply about these species that it protects? And then we need celebrity involvement. We have a few celebrities that we want you to work with. And the work that we did ended up getting 33 celebrities organically to volunteer and come into the mix. Once they heard about it, we were able to tell a story that we believed either a 7-year-old or a 70-year-old could understand, and the importance of these species. And I won't talk about the work because it's on our site, but those are two clients that we were really fond of. And we're fond of all of our clients. So if anybody happens to look at this, we love all of you guys.
Except for the bad ones who do
bad things. Except for the bad ones.
When you go into a brand, do you find that they generally know who they are, or that you're actually having to back them up and do some work to kind of dig out that identity so that they understand it and can and understand it and can elucidate it to others? Because I do think sometimes people have like a intuitive sense of what they're trying to do, but if you said to them, all right, tell me what your brand purpose is, what is your brand mission, I don't think they could do it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I would say it's probably a mix. Some of our clients feel like they know who they are, and they're right. They have a very clear understanding of who they are and what the world needs to know about them. Other clients come in and they may believe that they know, but they're kind of floundering a little bit. And you have to really pair up, what are the perceptions in the marketplace? Because perception is reality. So even if you come out and you say, this is who we are, that's not going to really carry a lot of water or hold a lot of weight if your consumers have a different perception. So it's equally as important to not only help them identify who they are at their core and what we need to amplify, but what are the perceptions out in the marketplace that we either need to alleviate, or they're right, and we need to double down on that. So for us, I think the big part of the value we bring to the table is just outside stimulus that we can bring into their world that they're not used to, and bring it with a sense of humility where we're not here to reinvent who you are, but there is some form of transformation that can always happen. And it doesn't always have to be major, but there might be 1 or 2 degrees on your languaging and your messaging that really help the world truly know who you are and what you stand for. And, you know, when you're talking about film and getting into film, for us, that was just the natural evolution, is everybody gravitates to a really good story. And the best way to tell a story is through a play button. I mean, there's really no better way to engage all of your senses, most of them, than through film.
What is the, how do you get a brand to sit down or stand up, whatever, to understand, to do the work so that they can get to the point where they can articulate who they are and what their purpose is? Is that just going through a lot of meetings with them? I mean, what does that process look like?
It really depends on the client specifically and the work that they've done so far and the life stage that they're at. I always explain, if you look at the logos on our website, we work with the Fortune 500s like Nike, Google, Twitter, Lyft. We also do a lot of work with nonprofits that we care about, small businesses, local companies, venture-backed startups. And it's never that work is more or less intentional, depending on who you're working with. It's just the method through which you approach the work, the breadth and depth of deliverables, and largely how much that's informed by primary research and strategy is what changes. Mm-hmm. The best example I always give is if a Colorado restaurant group were to come to us and say, hey, we need help with branding, what they're really asking for is logos and colors and type and some really helping to navigate through mission, vision, values, mantras, things like that. Whereas if Procter & Gamble came to us, we'd spend millions of dollars on segmentations and ethnographies and research and strategy to really hone in on what they're looking to do before we even move a pixel, just because the size of a bet that they're placing when they launch a new brand into the market requires a much greater level of accuracy. Mm-hmm. And so when you're a smaller brand, you can lean on launching more into the world, gleaning insights, and then continuing to iterate and optimize and push towards a direction that you want to go in. Whereas if you're a larger brand, you have so much spend behind these messages that they really need to be on point. It's a long-winded way of saying, we really want to come and meet clients where they're at, because if you're a larger client, we want to be talking about who your consumers are and what do they believe, what are their attitudes and behaviors, and how can we really stand for something within that light. Whereas if you're a smaller company, we're leaning on experience a little bit more in what we're looking to do. But I think the best way that we like to put it is, Adam Scalecki, who leads our head of design, I'll give him a shout out on this because he's evangelized this a lot within our agency. But Brené Brown talks a lot about the difference between belonging and fitting in. And I think when you focus too much on fitting in, it's almost like you're going to a party and you're changing who you are to fit in with different types of groups in a way that's very inauthentic. Whereas belonging is when you're showing up in a way, establishing a point of view on the world that people can attach emotional affinity to, find a sense of belonging within. And that's when your truest sense of self. And oftentimes when you try too hard to fit in, it's in direct tension to actually establishing a community of belonging. And so as much as I say, there's sort of the upstream and downstream aspects of this, that's very much true. But at the same time, I think it's very important for us to almost isolate ourselves from the world and talk to founders, talk to executive teams, and understand what we really want to represent. Because people do care a lot less about how you're different and a lot more about what your point of view is. And the more that you can do that in an authentic way, the much better way that you'll represent yourself as a brand. It's a long-winded answer, but I would say that's the core tenet that we want to approach. But we would have different ingredients and different inputs depending upon the size of engagement and ultimately what they're looking to do from a communication standpoint.
Do you find when you go into brands that you also need to do work with them internally, meaning figure out a way to align their culture with whatever their external brand is? Is that something that you guys also get into doing?
It's a good question. You're saying their internal culture?
Yeah. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people about brand purpose, let me think of an example. There was Nike's kind of an example, but I'll use this, but this has nothing to do with human design. That's the caveat. This was just a separate thing that happened in the press, but where Nike had something that happened in the press where what happened was not really aligned with their stated brand purpose. And so it caused some controversy. This was a couple of years ago. I think then they went back in and did more work in terms of making sure that their internal culture aligned with what was going on externally. So, and then another example of it is if you're a company and you're saying, we stand for XYZ, but then your employees either aren't living that or you're having some internal issues that don't reflect that. It's hard to, when push comes to shove, you know, really reflect that authentically. So I just wondered if you guys go in and do any of that kind of cultural work when you're trying to establish what people's brand purposes are.
We have. We haven't been commissioned to do that cultural work overtly, but by nature of what we're doing, it does kind of bleed into the internal culture. And you're just bringing up such a great point, which is how do you make sure that what you're telling the world about matches what you're doing in the world?
Yeah.
And
in your own companies, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we did work with one company in California that went through a rebrand, and they were saying that, you know, they used adjectives like we're really trying to push boundaries. We're trying to really do fresh work. We're trying to be authentic. They used all these different adjectives, and we did the work that we did work its way back into their culture. And some of it even just to the aesthetic vibe that would help facilitate that culture. So we came in and helped with their office redesign and helped. We were not architects by any means, but we did help with how do you create a space that facilitates the thinking and the behaviors that you're hoping to encourage. So they did end up hiring us to help with the space design, which has a massive impact on just cultural vibes. And then the work that we do on a brand level, when we talk about messaging and tone and voice, all of that out, the deliverables and the outcome of those engagements is handed to the client with the intent that they will have someone internally to go evangelize that and to help really say, these are the values that we hold true as an organization. This is our constitution, and this is how we need to start operating. So we hope that it has some impact.
Yeah.
And I think it's oftentimes viewed almost in that, hey, can your work change and have impact on culture? And a lot of times too, it's oftentimes when you're working with younger companies that are growing at a rapid pace, how do we really define what our culture has been in the case that we don't lose that and we keep that core to who we are? Like a really good example of that is we worked with Blue Air, Romania's largest airline, and they were pilot founded. Romania is rich in aviation history. People don't know this, but I don't want to speak for everybody.
I definitely don't.
I didn't know when we started, but the airport in Bucharest is named after Henry Coanda, who's the guy who actually created the concept of lift within physics, that without that, the Wright brothers wouldn't have been able to do what they did. And so Blue Air was a pilot founded airline that went from flying a couple planes to becoming the largest airline in Romania, and especially with Romania's history, really being tasked with bringing in the diaspora back to visit home or leave home and visit family in ways that really connect Romanians across Europe in a very important way. And they brought in a new C-suite when there was sort of this understanding that they had taken it as far as they could, and they might have been great pilots, but not necessarily the best operationally in terms of where they could scale that airline to become. And while they're still an important part of the conversation, wanted to hand it over to seasoned aviation executives. And we were tasked by that new team to say, hey, we really want to create a campaign that is outward facing, but really serves as a rallying cry internally, that as much as we're growing, as much as we're scaling, as much as there's a lot of changing from a who's taking the reins of the company perspective, that we are exactly who we are. We are Romanian. We do have this rich aviation culture. We are pilot founded. We are safety first, experience first, things like that, that they really wanted to make sure came through in the messaging. So I think sometimes it's often always viewed as repositioning and rechanging, but when you're a really fast growing organization, a lot of it is just really keeping the potency around what got you to where you're going.
No, that is a good example. Do you have other examples, which is a little always hard off the top of your head, but any other examples of clients you've worked for where you can say, this is what the marketing and creative have looked like after we've defined the brand purpose, and you can kind of show how that work has dovetailed?
The smart wool work around do what feels natural, I believe, is still out there and they're still using that. We have some work that by the time you listen to this podcast might be out in the world, but we're doing some work that we're just insanely proud of, both from the client side and our side, around Land O'Lakes.
This is what I wanted you to talk about, and I couldn't remember the vendor. Okay.
Perfect. Yes. Yeah. So they, I mean, just such a great organization, over 100 years old. They're a co-op of 1,700 farms. They're farmer owned. They're known for the dairy side of the business. Everybody knows Land O'Lakes butter, but they have four large brands under their enterprise umbrella that work together really tightly for the benefit of agriculture and healthy food and providing nourishment for everybody on the planet. And the work that we're doing with them, I believe, will really be instrumental in helping push their brand at the enterprise level forward. And it's just work that everybody here is insanely proud of, because their CMO, Heather, is a visionary. Their CEO, Beth Ford, is, I think one of the top 20 CEOs in the nation. She was invited by Biden to be in his administration, and she cared so deeply about what she was had the opportunity to do at Land O'Lakes that she turned that down and took this job at Land O'Lakes. So they've just been visionary in their own right, and they invited us alongside to tell their story. You'll see that work out shortly. I wish I could speak more specifics, but a lot of the employees at Land O'Lakes haven't even seen it or heard it yet. So I kind of can't on that front. There's an organization called Human Told in New York. Dan, can you remind me what they were called prior to Human Told?
Douglas Psychotherapy.
So thank you. So Douglas Psychotherapy.
That's a very big difference. Yes.
Big difference. And the an organization of really passionate people that are providing online therapy and remote therapy for people who need it. And when they approached us, they needed to get their story out in the world in a more powerful way. We, through conversations with them, had come to the conclusion that a rebrand would be needed, renamed them to Human Told, redid their site, redid their messaging. A lot of the stuff that's out in the world is our work there. Dan, do you have any examples top of mind?
I think Finance of America Reverse would be a really good example of that. They've been a client of ours for a long time, and they're in a heavily stigmatized industry, which is the reverse mortgage industry, because there have been histories of that industry that have had some like concerns around predatory lending and things like that, and in ways that have put a shadow over a financial instrument that can actually be pretty beneficial to folks looking to empower the retirement that they want to live. And so we've really been working to help them, which really own what they are doing from their action standpoint, where it's like, you can say that as much as you want, but if the world isn't hearing that until they're getting on the phone with you, it's really hard to break down those barriers of a industry that has been stigmatized over such a long period of time.
Yeah.
And FAR has done a lot of work of really understanding retirees where they're at and helping them go far, pun not intended, on their retirement in the sense that like people want different things out of retirement. Like there's this sort of understanding of like, oh, once I become 65, that gives me the grace to be able to just sit on a beach or sit in front of my TV and do nothing for the rest of my life into my sunset years. Whereas the reality is like 65 is not what 65 used to be. And people want to be helping their kids start businesses or traveling the world, and maybe want to do that at a time that they don't have to wait till they're 75 to do that. And so we've done a lot of really thoughtful work around showing real lives, showing people who have been positively impacted by this financial instrument, and having them really talk openly about what it has done for them, and really helping people to understand the instrument itself so that there's no surprises on that front, as well as bringing a brand personality that shows sort of the inquisitive nature of where they're trying to come alongside retirees and find the right product to support them. And they've been really innovative in even product development around not your traditional reverse mortgage, but jumbo reverse mortgages and half forward, half reverse mortgages and things like that, that can really support people in getting financial flexibility earlier in life in doing things that they're really proud of in their sunset and twilight years, so to speak. So that's one that
I'm a good example.
Really proud of, where you've seen it come over the last 2 to 3 years has been night and day with representing who they have been for a while, but just weren't putting the right signals out into the world.
That's a good example. Thank you. And then, John, just one thing referring back to the Land O'Lakes example. I talked to John and Dan prior to doing this podcast when we were talking about Land O'Lakes a little. And I feel like one thing that you could say about it, I did think that was interesting when you were just sort of prepping me about it, was just how the work that they do does go back. It goes back into things that Land O'Lakes provides for communities that people didn't really know about, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct. So they were a big proponent of starting. Actually, they did start this idea called the American Connection Project around the, and this is just one of their initiatives that people don't know about, but really the importance of providing broadband internet to rural communities. And they then basically built a coalition of about 170 large brands to come alongside them to then go to Capitol Hill and get legislation passed for funding to provide broadband in rural communities, because broadband, as we know, helps bring education, helps bring telehealth, helps bring new jobs, it helps band a community together. And that's sometimes hard for people that have access to broadband and don't think twice mm-hmm. about it to realize the impact of that. But if you think about, if you don't have broadband, if you don't have high speed and you cannot access content online like a masterclass or a Skillshare or a Khan Academy, if you can't access educational content, if you cannot have a telehealth appointment with your doctor, you know, it's just such a huge thing that we take for granted. And for Land O'Lakes to spearhead that was just huge. And then what they're doing around the farmers that they have within their co-op and how the money goes back to those farmers and how they really have a lot of initiatives that we're going to continue to help tell the world about, where they're taking care of those farmers. It's just huge. So yeah, I'm glad you reminded me that those are things that we're really helping them amplify and tell stories around.
Yeah, that was what I mean, without revealing like whatever this upcoming campaign is, but I felt like those are two things that we talked about that, you know, people just don't know. You think Land O'Lakes and margarine or butter, and you don't really give it another thought. But this whole idea of, you know, working communities to bring rural broadband, which doesn't even really have anything to do necessarily with Land O'Lakes' core mission, but probably does have ramifications for how their customers are living. So, and especially in pandemic, right? Like, how do you not have, if your school is online, how do you not have broadband? So yeah, I thought that was a great example of incorporating that, even that larger purpose, and then over into, like, you're doing that, but you're not communicating it out. So it's I think that's interesting work that you do, and a good example of your core mission. So wrapping it up, I'll start with you, Dan. Is there anything that you can point to coming up in the near future that's sort of cool coming up for human design?
Ooh, lots of things. I'm really excited about human entertainment, which we announced formally about 3 months ago, which is our very proactive effort to, as much as we've been doing a lot of documentary work within the lens of branded content, we also have had two successful films that are more in the theatrical, non-scripted space, and really standing that up in a way to show that that's a core competency that we have. It has been very exciting, and we do have a documentary in the work that we can't share the details on. I would if I could, but the person paying for it wouldn't really want us to. But that one's going to be super, super exciting. Really interested to see how we approach the kind of whole Web3 world. It's been something that John, Matt, and I, and a lot of the team here have been really, really invested and interested in over the past 2 to 3 years. And we're really starting to get brand opportunities to bring that to life. And I'm glad that we're a bit ahead of the curve in terms of not only the thinking of what the possibility is for that world from a utility standpoint and a brand building and community and governance standpoint, but more so from just even having the technology partners in place to help that stuff come to life at speed. I do think that's going to revolutionize the way that not only brand interact with consumers, but the entire way that the world operates. And we have a lot of exciting opportunities that are going to come to life this year around NFTs and the metaverse and sort of that whole Web3 space.
Okay, so we'll come back and do a pod about that. So
yeah, 100%. We're doing some really cool things. I think doesn't always come across in our work, because we tend to share more of the visceral components of the end result of our client right. work when you think of like the films and the campaigns and the performance. But we do play a lot more in business strategy in a ways that we're competing more so against the Bains and the McKinseys, whereas a lot of agencies start at creative strategy. So we do continue to stand up a lot of very thoughtful practices around segmentation and ethnography and jobs research. Obviously some qual and quant executions within that, but really thoughtful loyalty program work that we have coming out around what is the future of loyalty mean and how can you get really specific around going beyond demographics and into jobs to be done, into attitudes, into behaviors, and really create bespoke experiences for people in a way that they feel part of something way more than getting like your 11th sandwich free, so to speak. So really excited about that. And then obviously brand and communications is the core of what we're doing. And I think we're really starting to establish ourselves as one of the best agencies in the country to really rethink how you want to own a brand positioning, build a moat around it, and then communicate and show up in the world in a very authentic way to own that. So that's sort of what we're excited about. But people ask about the future of human all the time. And I always say, if we had a 5-star North Star, we'd be DOA.
That's a lot, though. I mean, just like qual and quant is a whole division, and then experiential is a whole division. And
yeah, it is. But I mean, I think what we're doing is we're always trying to stay 3 to 6 months ahead of the world for our clients, because that's where the big opportunities in the outsized return on investment tends to play. And so the world's just moving so fast right now that even my answer now is a lot different than what it would have been if we had this podcast interview 6 months ago. So there's a lot to be excited about. Yeah, John, I don't know if I took too much time there, if there's anything you wanted to
add. I think you covered it. The only thing I would add is just the team that we continue to be able to build at Human is something that we're thrilled about. We just have such good people, such smart talent, and the growth that we've been able to experience and be able to attract here, we're pretty poised to accomplish the things that Dan just mentioned.
Well, I also noticed on your website that you're still doing quite a bit of hiring, yes?
Correct. Yes. So please go to our website. we're growing in a good way, and it's neat. It's fun to be able to provide that sort of community and sense of culture in a small way to our broader community here in Boulder and Denver in the Front Range. So we've been really fortunate. We've had great clients. We've had great employees. We're still independent 8 years in, and we're pretty hyped on what we have in front of us.
Okay. That's a good place to wrap, but we'll come back at some point and talk about Web3 and metaverse and NFTs and all that. And then also maybe whatever documentary is coming out in the next few months.
Yeah, that podcast will need to be 3 hours, because John and I can go on for days about that.
All right. We'll pare it down for you. All right, both you guys, thank you so much. Stay warm.
Awesome. Thanks, Paige. Appreciate the time.
That's it for this episode of the Daily Brief podcast. If you have suggestions for conversations, please reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn at Promax Global, or on Instagram and Twitter at Promax_Global. You can also email us at dailybrief@promax.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Apple Podcasts, where you can also rate and review us, or on Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, thanks for listening.